Welcome to a Juno Afternoon on Monday, October 12th, 2015. I'm your host, Scott Burton. On today's show, we'll learn about Wooshkin Ade's upcoming Grand Poetry Slam. We'll meet four new AmeriCorps members starting their service next week. We'll get an update of upcoming art classes at the Canvas. And we'll talk to Sally Smith about this year's Holiday Pops. Those interviews, National Native News, Writer's Almanac, Bird Note Music, and more right here on a Juno Afternoon.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Métis and non-status Indians in Canada are before the Supreme Court, pushing for recognition and access to government programs and services. As Dan Karpinchuk reports, it's a case that began 16 years ago.
Dwight Dorey is the National Chief of the Congress of Aboriginal Peoples. He represents about 600,000 Métis and non-status Indians in Canada. Dorey says he knew the process that began 16 years ago would take a while, but never this long, despite the legal wrangling and attempts by the federal government to block progress. This fight, he says, is about clarity and equality.
For the Métis and non-status individuals, the people out there throughout the land, from coast to coast to coast, it's a matter of due respect, it's a matter of recognition, and it's a matter of not being forgotten anymore. And finally, it's an issue of having that right to be consulted.
Clarity would also determine whether his group falls under the jurisdiction of the federal or provincial governments. In 2011, a federal court ruled that Métis and non-status Indians do fall under federal responsibility. But Ottawa appealed that case. A new ruling last year found that Métis people could stay under federal jurisdiction, but non-status Indians could not. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
Members of the Native American community in Albuquerque, New Mexico, and their supporters are marching downtown tonight to take a stand against racism. The Red Nation, an advocacy group, is hosting the event on the city's first Indigenous Peoples Day. Coalition members are calling on city leaders to abolish Columbus Day, which they say is a racist colonial holiday. Melanie Yazzie is a co-founder of the Red Nation.
On October 12th, we honor all of our relatives and ancestors who have gone before us to lay a path so that we may live and continue to fight against the system that seeks our elimination. And it marks the beginning of a resurgence in this historical moment nationwide of a strong, skilled, vocal, and highly organized Native political presence in Albuquerque. This is why, on October 12th, we are reclaiming Albuquerque for Indigenous people.
Civil rights activist Jewel Hall says the Indigenous Peoples Day recognition is a landmark for the city.
The genocidal legacy of Columbus against Native American people and African American people must be rejected and abolished. Our community is joining other cities that are saying no to hate and to bigotry.
The Albuquerque City Council approved the October 12th recognition last week. Six of nine council members signed the declaration, including President Ray Garduño.
I'm with you, not just 100%, but I'm with you in the street, in the boardroom, in the council chambers. And let me tell you, you are welcome there as long as I'm there. And even after I leave, I will make sure that what we have gained, we don't lose.
A number of local groups are showing their support for Albuquerque's Native community, including women's groups, peace and justice centers, and student groups. Other cities recognizing Native Americans include Lawrence, Kansas, and Portland, Oregon. Navajo Nation President Russell Begay is applauding New Mexico's congressional delegation for asking President Obama to declare an emergency for the tribe due to the Gold King mine waste spill. Begay says last week New Mexico's U.S. lawmakers sent a letter to Obama urging him to take action on the Navajo Nation's request. Recovery efforts continue for Navajo people in the Four Corners who were hit hard by the August spill. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. And by the law firm of Sanosky, Chambers, Saxe, Miller & Munson, advocating Native American interests throughout the United States, with offices in New Mexico, California, Alaska, and Washington, D.C.
Support by WanderingBold.com, providing American Indian crafts and supplies since 1969. Shipping nationwide, virtually everything you need to powwow is at WanderingBold.com. Holiday delivery on orders placed by December 15th.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Monday, October 12th, 2015. Scott Burton, your host. It's about 6 minutes after the hour. Currently 49 degrees at the Juno Airport, 48 out in Gustavus, and same over in Hoonah. Joining me now in the studio is Christy Nami Erickson. She's one of the co-founders of Wushkinadeyi, and they are having their upcoming Grand Poetry Slam this Saturday. Welcome to the studio, Christy.
Thank you so much, Scott.
It's great to have you. So this...
Always a pleasure.
Is this the fifth annual?
Yes, sir.
Wow, it's 5 years.
Yeah, it's crazy to think we've been doing it this long.
And so that's 5 Grand Slams, but there's so much more to it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Every single month since we started in October 2010, we've held an open mic and poetry slam in a variety of venues across the town. Some people only stop by for the Grand Slam. Some people maybe haven't been there since 2010. It's kind of a open door policy at Wushkinadeyi, so we're happy to see you when we see you. And I think for a lot of people, if they've been meaning to go to a slam all year and just haven't made it, there's like no excuses when Grand Slam comes, because they got to see who's been winning, who's been working on their craft, who's been developing their work, who are the new voices in the community, and it is always guaranteed to be an amazing show.
Absolutely. And so you mentioned the open mics and poetry slams. If somebody does well at them, they get invited to the Grand Slam. How's that work?
Yeah, so every month we have the open mic and we have a poetry slam, and the poetry slam is the competitive portion of the evening. So by the end of any slam, we have a champion. And so when it comes to the Grand Slam every year, what we do is we invite all of the previous champions from each month for the past season to come and then compete for the Grand Slam title. So what we're seeing this Saturday is really the best of the best from the last year. We also invite some folks who maybe don't compete in the slam, and they just do the open mic, maybe some folks who are some emerging voices in our community and are showing a lot of promise, and also some folks who have just been regulars month after month, and we just love to hear them speak. So we've invited some of those folks to be some of the opening performers as well.
Excellent. Yeah, tell us a little bit more about the atmosphere, because it's called a poetry slam, and there is competition, but mm-hmm. from the ones that I've been to, they're very supportive.
Yeah, I remember sitting in this chair actually 5 years ago when we were having our first one, and I think it was Jeff Brown at the time, and he asked, you know, do I need to bring my boxing gloves, you know, to come compete in this? And it sounds so aggressive, the idea of a poetry slam, but it's actually kind of been dubbed the friendliest competition in town. It really is about being able to share our words, share our stories in a very supportive, inclusive environment, and it's not unheard of to hear people people clapping or making noises in, from the audience in response to the poets on stage to really show their support, show their encouragement. We've had folks get up and they're about to read something very personal, or maybe halfway through a difficult poem they kind of stall because they're holding back tears or they're holding back their courage, you know, or whatever is kind of stopping them in that moment. And we've kind of started a tradition where we send snaps to that person, and we snap as a way of saying, like, I'm here for you, we're waiting for you, take your time, we look forward to hearing what you're going to say, and everybody here is here to support you, not judge you. And it's a really beautiful moment, I think, when that happens, because it's non-traditional to your average poetry scene. It really is this interconnection between the audience and the poet, as opposed to just the poet giving us something. It's really this synergistic opportunity.
Yeah, and from what I've seen, it's quite a community. It extends beyond these events. It seems like you guys all know each other really well.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we consider everybody their family in many ways, and it's a family I'm proud of because it's a multi-generational family. We've got people there. We've had slam poets as young as 7 and 8, up to elders. And it's not surprising to see all those people in the audience, people from different backgrounds. You know, you've got secretaries and people who work at fish processing plants, and real Alaskan judges have been there to judge. You know, like, we get this just medley, almost a motley crew of performers and listeners. And I think that's what makes it so special, this sense of diversity in the audience and in the stories.
Cool. Let's talk a little bit about the art of spoken word.
Sure.
And how it compares and contrasts to traditional poetry. And I don't know if you want to share something.
Sure.
Yeah, let us know.
Sure. Yeah, I can. I'll just speak just quickly, I guess, to the difference for me between kind of maybe your average page poetry versus spoken word. As a writer, I think they're technically should be no difference, right? The poetry can be written and it can be spoken, it could be danced, poetry is kind of everywhere. But I think a lot of people, the major difference between regular kind of traditional poetry as we've learned it in the schools and spoken word is that spoken word is written with the intent to share it with others. So it's different than like maybe what you write in a diary and hide under your pillow. It's work that you are willing to give to an audience and are willing to kind of perfect it in a way that makes sure that what you're trying to convey gets conveyed. And it's come out of really rich traditions of hip-hop, resistance, and social justice. So a lot of times spoken word poetry has been used as a voice for people who maybe otherwise don't feel like they have a voice in community or in artistic circles, in the literary scene, whatever. And for that reason is why spoken word has always kind of been a hook for me personally. It's been kind of my language of liberation is kind of what I often say. I can say things in poetry that I can't say in English, you know, sitting with someone. So.
All right. And did you have a piece to share with us?
Sure. I'll read this poem, which I think might be the one I'm performing on Saturday. So if you're listening right now, you get this sneak peek. Don't spoil it for others. It's a little gift we'll give. It's a new poem called A Good Girl's Guide to Misbehaving. You can begin to misbehave by starting small. Stroll the city and don't use the crosswalks. Talk to strangers. Bite hard candies. Check out a huge stack of books from the library and disregard the due dates. Bring a dozen rainbow-sprinkled donuts to work and don't share them. After a while, you can try staying up past your bedtime. When your alarm goes off, push snooze every 5 minutes for an hour. Transition into the morning by daydreaming. Have ideas with your coffee. If something upsets you in the middle of your day, cry about it. If something is wonderful, wonder about it. Later, you can go to a bar by yourself, Reject drinks from men who think you're almost as beautiful as their last girlfriend. Dance. Dance like your bones are making love to their own ligaments, like you have a pivotal passion for your own body. Turn down for what? Cross a crowded room. Squeezed by the man whose shoulders could carry the world, or you. Run your hands across his back as you softly step through his space, like every muscle in his thoughts might be a star, but you're not here to catch one. Modify this move by saying, "Excuse me." Do what feels comfortable for you. Stay out past midnight, even if you run out of magic. Eat a milkshake for breakfast. Why not? You'll find that misbehaving gets easier the more you do it. Soon you might neglect to remember birthdays in a timely fashion. You might let the weeds stage a coup in your garden. Your closet could be full of unironed clothes and poster board protest signs. When you get good at misbehaving, then, at a family reunion, recall fond memories of relatives people are no longer proud of. Campaign for the most broke candidate. Learn a new hobby in your 60s. Go to a dinner party and correct racist assumptions over grilled chicken. Want to get good at misbehaving? Support the troops. And the dishwashers. And the orange pickers. And the seamstresses. And the mailmen. Support the road workers and the surgeons and the musicians and the city council members and the teachers and the admin assistants and the men and women who are standing in Ok Bay cutting heads off fish at this very moment. Support their grandmothers. Support your children. Teach them history with honesty. Teach them to write their own questions. Forget state assessments. Teach them the language you dream in. Stand back and get a good look at the masterpiece that is your morning. And then, when the guards aren't watching, cross the rope and touch it. Say what you feel, sister. Have an outburst and don't apologize. Be the kind of good girl who stands, who speaks, who moves, who shakes. Because in the world I want to live in, all the good girls I know are great at misbehaving.
Wow. Thank you so much for sharing that with us.
Thanks for giving me the space.
Wow. What a piece. So we're going to hear stuff like that on Saturday night.
Yeah. Yeah,
and better. And tell us what else, what are other styles that we might hear that night?
So we're going to hear some spoken word. We might, one new thing this season is we have a Wishkinadei band, and sometimes it's just Jacob Bigard on guitar. Sometimes he's joined by Ryan Cortez on drums. Sometimes we get some other guest musicians in there. But I think that one thing you're going to notice this year that's different than the last is kind of this extra ambiance accent of music kind of running throughout the show. And I think we're going to see a little bit of that with some poetry as well. Let's see what else we got going on that night. Gonzo's going to be there selling treats as usual to satisfy your belly and your soul. We'll have the new season 6 t-shirts by Crystal Whirl available for purchase. Yeah, and as usual, tons of love, tons of warmth. We're going to be making an announcement about some new changes coming up this season 6, and we're pretty excited about those as well.
And when can we find out about the lineup?
The lineup. Oh, I've got the lineup here right now.
Oh,
if
cool.
You want.
Yeah.
Let's see. This year, so the Slam champs that are returning for the Grand Slam title or to compete for the Grand Slam title are Erica Berggren, Fish Hook, Mike Christensen, David Parrish, Maureen Longworth, and Christina Apathy. Performing, doing some opening performances are going to be DJ DeRego, Amy Pinney, Carolyn Garcia, Ziggy Unziker, and myself. And you can look forward to the whole show being hosted by Connor Lendrum and everyone's favorite, Annie Bartholomew, right here at KXLL.
That's going to be a lot of fun. What time does it start on Saturday? It
starts at 7 o'clock.
It's at the Jack.
It's the Jack. It's pay as you can. Nobody's ever turned away at the door. We're suggesting a donation of $5 to $10. Helps kind of cover our program costs throughout the year. But if you are just there for some poetry, it's a hard time right now. Please come anyway.
Are you guys a nonprofit?
Yes.
All right. Wooshke, you can find you on Facebook pretty easy too,
best
right?
Best way is Wooshke, W-O-O-S-H-K, which stands for Kanadei, but that'll get you there.
Christy Nami Erickson, she's co-founder of Wooshke. They'll be having their grand poetry slam this Saturday, 7 o'clock at the Jack. Thank you again for sharing your work with us. Anything else you'd like to share, Christy?
No, thank you so much for making the space and making the time, KTOO. I really appreciate you guys always helping us get the word out and making sure we get some new community folks in there each month.
Thank you. See ya.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Monday, the 12th of October, 2015. It was on this day, 1892, the Pledge of Allegiance was recited en masse, first time more than 2 million students. It had been written just a month before by a Baptist minister named Francis Bellamy, published it in a magazine, Youth's Companion, and distributed it across the country. It was a little bit shorter in 1892, I pledge allegiance to my flag and the republic for which it stands, one nation, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. It was revised to read the flag of the United States of America in 1923, and then the words under God were added in 1954. Under God was added because President Dwight D. Eisenhower had attended a sermon by the Reverend George Dougherty, who said that apart from the mention of the United States of America, it could be a pledge of any republic. In fact, he could hear little Moscow children repeating a similar pledge to the hammer and sickle flag in Moscow. And so Eisenhower was convinced, and within a few months, they included the words under God as a way to distinguish this Pledge of Allegiance from one in the Soviet Union. It's the birthday of the author and psychologist Robert Coles, born in Boston, 1929, author of more than 60 books. He was in the South at the beginning of the Civil Rights Movement. He was planning to be a child psychologist, and one day during a visit to New Orleans, 1960, he saw a white mob surrounding a six-year-old black girl named Ruby Bridges, who was kneeling in her starched white dress in the middle of it all to pray for the mob that was attacking her. And Coles decided to begin what would become his work for the next few decades, trying to understand how children and their parents come to terms with radical change, became his book Children of Crisis, which came out in 1967. Robert Coles said, "We should look inward and think about the meaning of our life and its purposes, lest we do it in 20 or 30 years and it's too late." It's the birthday of the poet and translator Robert Fitzgerald, born in Geneva, New York, 1910, best known for his English translations of Homer's Odyssey and the Iliad. He was classics professor at Harvard, and he liked to recite Homer out loud. And it's the birthday of the novelist Alice Childress, born in Charleston, South Carolina, 1916. She was a playwright, best known for her novels A Hero Ain't Nothing But a Sandwich and A Short Walk. Alice Childress, who said, "Life is just a short walk from the cradle to the grave, and it sure behooves us to be kind to one another along the way." Here's a poem for today by Barry Spax entitled Looking at a Lizard. My only purpose this moment is looking at a lizard. Does he know he's not alone? He breathes with tiny push-ups, his skin all hairline caverns, soaking up the sun. I doubt, alive, I'm liable to get closer to timelessness than this, looking at a little lizard breathing. A poem by Barry Spax, looking at a lizard from his collection Shaping Water, published by Gunpowder Press and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by Lumosity, introducing a 10-minute fit test to challenge memory, attention, and problem-solving to calculate baseline scores. Learn more at lumosity.com. And by TIAA CREF, a global financial company dedicated to delivering financial outcomes that matter. TIAA CREF, created to serve, built to perform. Learn more at TIAA.org. Produced by Joy Biles, assisted by Kathy Roach. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Support for this station comes from the Treadwell Ice Arena, located at 105 Savico Road in Douglas. Treadwell Arena is now open for the 2015-2016 season with a 5-day schedule. More information at juno.org/parkrec/icerink or call 586-4540.
Welcome to a Juno Afternoon here on Monday, October 12th, 2015. It's about 25 minutes past the hour, and I've been joined by folks here in the community now. JEDC, or the Juno Economic Development Council, STEM Project Manager Becca Parks. Welcome to the show.
Thanks, Scott.
Thank you. And she's been joined by Courtney Weiss and Linnell Bush. They are both AmeriCorps members, volunteers. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, nice to have both of you here. Becca, let's start with you. Tell us about STEM, STAR, JEDC, all of the above.
Sure. So JEDC, hopefully folks know we're a nonprofit in town that's focused on economic development in Juneau and Southeast Alaska. And as part of that, we have one of our major initiatives is talent development. It's a really important part of looking at that overall community and long-term economic strength. And so with that, we have a science, technology, engineering, and math program that's been around for almost a decade. And a new part of our talent development program and initiative is the STAR AmeriCorps program. So another acronym for you, it's Service to Achieve Results. And it's very similar to what SAGA had with their Connections program, where we're bringing in service members from either locally or around the country, mostly college graduates, but people really motivated to do a year of national service and to look for places where they can help fill gaps in the community where we might not have a regular employee or a full-time nonprofit position to meet needs in our community. So we get these service members that are willing to really put in an impressive amount of time and energy to filling those gaps and helping our community out for a year.
And how many AmeriCorps members do we have through this program in Juneau right now?
Currently, we have 4 members placed, and we have 9 openings for members. So we're actively recruiting for more members to join us for this service year. We have 3 placements that are immediately needed. Those are with the LEAP after school program at Glacier Valley and Riverbend, and one with the NCAD program, the National Council on Alcoholism and Drug Dependence. So we have those openings. And then the 4 placements we have, I'll let Courtney and Linnell talk about what they're up to for the year. We also have someone placed at AWARE and somebody working with the United Way.
Okay. Courtney, you're at JEDC, is that right? Tell us what keeps you busy there.
I am the STEM AmeriCorps. I'm working with the First LEGO League and Junior First LEGO League robotics programs this year. I'm basically coordinating all the teams, coaching the coaches, being there for them at practices, doing all the administrative work for them, building robots for them, basically giving them the basics to get them going, and I will be directing the tournament in December at Centennial Hall, and then we have a new Junior First LEGO League Expo, which is in March.
And this is year 2 for you, right?
Yes.
So you must like it. You voluntarily signed up for the second year, right?
Yeah, I could say Becca dragged me in. Kept me here.
That job description sounded pretty fun. Well, yeah. Now, what keeps you busy at JDHS?
Oh, quite a few things. I coordinate the Beyond School, which I teach on after-school home economics class, or during-school home economics class. I coordinate the Beyond, the Reconnecting Youth class, which I help manage things. I make sure they have everything they need in their day-to-day, only on Thursdays. I also connect and look for internships for the sophomores and juniors throughout nonprofit, profit businesses. I also look for the juniors who look for government internships. And while doing all that, I stay with the kids and they come in and say hi and all the good things in the day.
Yeah, a lot of responsibility.
Yes.
Yeah, a lot of hands-on student to teacher contact. Sounds like fun.
Quite a bit. They have quite a few, like, fun qualities that they like to joke around and come in and say hi and throw gum at me. Not complete gum, but gum in the wrapper. They give me gum sometimes.
Does this tie in with what you'd like to do next?
Yes, I would preferably like to become, like, a guidance counselor or a teacher in the future to pursue higher education, but that's just my future aspiration.
Okay. And so among things that are interesting about this program is that you have still some finding a match with AmeriCorps volunteers with organizations here in town, right?
Right. So the whole program is designed to, like I said, fill gaps in the community. So when we looked at the STEM program, we saw that there were a lot of private teams forming, but it wasn't a public school option yet. So we were able to create an AmeriCorps position where Courtney could work with the public schools and make sure that it's a program available to all kids in Juneau. We know with the CHOICE program that we've got graduation problems. We have kids that aren't getting through high school, and so the CHOICE program is really there to help make sure that more of our students are graduating in 4 or 5 years. So any project like that where you see something that needs to be done in the community that we're just not getting to, we're all, you know, filling more jobs than we can quite handle with our one position title. AmeriCorps is a program that can help do that. It's a national service program, so people that are coming in to do something that's meeting a need for others in our community, in our country. We're looking for projects. It takes a partner organization. There's a financial match between what we're bringing in from our state commission and what that partner organization has to contribute as well. We are looking for mentors, whatever project we place them in, whatever their service plan is for the year, they need somebody who's more settled to help make sure that they're successful in what their project is. But it can be anything. You know, we're looking at one to help with the food bank in town. We're looking at positions with the Forest Service to do trail work. So we don't know all of the needs in the community. There's a million things that need to be done. So anybody with ideas should just give a call. We can talk through things. Not everything's going to work, but we love thinking about ways we can use this program to make Juneau a better place for everybody.
Sounds great, Becca. What is the number they should call, or the website or the Facebook page?
So JEDC.org, and if you go into our programs, you can find AmeriCorps there. You can call me, 523-2334, or send me an email, rsoza@JEDC.org. And you can even look up, we've got an AmeriCorps alumni group that sort of combines all of those Juneau programs that are involved with national service into one group, and that's Juneau AmeriCorps Alumni is the group on Facebook. And there's other groups in town. There's the Jesuit Volunteers, Vista Volunteers, that are doing that same sort of work.
Okay. Well, I'm sure both the JEDC and also the high school are thrilled to have you both. Do we have any listeners right now who are thinking about becoming an AmeriCorps volunteer? Would you say that it's worth it, or do you have some advice for them?
Completely.
Yeah?
Yeah, it's definitely worth it. Even though, you know, you're doing national service, you're definitely not going to make money doing it. But it feels really good, and you feel like you accomplish a lot through this program.
Great. Same for you, Lino?
Yeah, the program is great. The kids are great. Becca's great. Courtney's great.
It's a feel-good all around.
All right, Lino Bush, Courtney Weiss, and Becca Parks, thanks for all coming in today. Anything else you want to add?
That's it for now.
Not really.
I will, if you meet any of the AmeriCorps, JVs, or Vistas in town, make sure you give them a big welcome. We're really glad they're here and want to get them all the resources they need.
Maybe take them out to dinner or something.
Yeah.
You know, help them out a little bit.
Buy them a coffee.
Great. See you later.
Grace, I'm the host of Friday Tidelines on KRNN. I listen to KRNN for the wide variety of music, the entertaining DJs, and the connection to the community. Tune in to KRNN 102.7.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Monday, October 12th, 2015. It's about 22 minutes till the top of the hour. Scott Burton, your host here on the show today. Now with me in the studio is Brandon Howard. He's the artistic coordinator over at the Canvas. Welcome to the show, Brandon.
Thank you, Scott.
And also Larissa Manuel. She's the art program assistant. Welcome to the show, Larissa.
Thanks, Scott.
Yeah. The Canvas, a happening place, as always. What's going on, you two?
We just want to come in today and share with you some of the classes that we have coming up this fall with the weather that we have, it's a good time to head inside, get some shelter, and, you know, take a class. We have a lot of classes that we're really excited about coming up in October and in November. Tomorrow night, we've got a class starting up with Inari Kalanen that is a color theory class, but it's not your typical academic color theory class. It's an applied color theory class. So for any artist who struggles with mixing colors or coming up with color palettes to use within their paintings or other mediums, she's an incredible teacher for that. So it's going to be a hands-on class where you learn about mixing colors and an applied color theory class. So that's a good one for people who already paint. And then on Thursday, we're really excited. We have a new ceramics instructor, Alex Patello. He's going to be teaching a Thursday evening wheel throwing class. We're thrilled to have him on board. Real young, real motivated, great potter. He's been working out at the university with Jeremy Kane Jr. for quite some time, and he's really excited to share some of that knowledge with the community. So that starts up on Thursday, and there's still a couple spots in that class. And then in November we have some more classes coming up.
Yeah, we've got some nice shorter ceramics workshops. So if you're not able to commit for 4 weeks, you can do a workshop. There's quite a few drawing classes in November, from landscape to the figure and drawing from life, which is a combination of landscapes and painting from a still life. So that's great. And there's also another class with Inari, acrylic depth and layering, if you want to learn more about creating depth in your paintings.
And Inari has this great technique with acrylic paints where, you know, a lot of people prefer oil over acrylic because of this depth and this richness. You have a transparency in oil paints that you can't get with acrylic paints. And she's got this great method of, I don't want to say faking it, but she has a technique that gives her acrylic paintings the feel of an oil painting.
Definitely creates that luminosity, yeah.
Mm.
If we have a listener who hasn't been to the canvas before, paint us a picture of the atmosphere down there. What's it look like? What are these classes like? Are they intense? Are they fun? Are people laughing? Where do they take place? All
sure.
of the above.
Yeah, well, they tend to be in the evenings. Each different artist will set their own schedule, but tend to be somewhere between 5:30 and 6:30 that they'll start. 4 weeks in length is our average class, so it might be four Mondays. And they're all usually open for all levels, so we really encourage everyone, don't be afraid. You're going to learn something, you're going to have fun, you're going to make art, and get out of the rain.
And before I started working as the artistic coordinator, I used to get to teach classes in the ceramic studio, and man, I miss it a lot, I'm not going to lie. I loved getting to be in the studio because, you know, I think art is sometimes something intimidating to people. And when they first get in there, they're a little bit nervous, but then you get to watch them learn and you see that it is so much fun. And the ceramics classes were always a real rowdy good time. You know, you have music going, it's a mess, it's fantastic. And every time I go into the painting classes, it's a real similar scene. It's not at all an uptight thing. No expectations, nobody's judging your work, and so all that. You know, all those insecurities or when you're nervous about showing your work or sharing it. Because creation of art, even if it is in a class, is a very personal experience. But they've got a great atmosphere, and we've got great instructors. You know, we share a lot of the instructors from the university. David Woody is teaching an oil painting class right now. We have Christopher Taylor signed up for teaching a figure drawing class here in December. And it's just, we got an awesome crew in there.
I have a question for you. Maybe there's somebody out there listening right now and they've never made art before. You are both artists. How would you convince them? What is it about the process of making art that makes it worth it?
Oh, man. I think just, yeah, I've run across a lot of people that don't believe that they are capable of it. But I think it just comes down to we all have a different style, and it's developing your style. And everything takes work, whether you're learning an instrument or making art. But hopefully it's fun along the way. And just, you know, coming home, taking something home from whatever class you're going to take, you're going to take something exciting home with you that you made. I think that's it.
Yeah. For me, it's almost like utility. You know, being able to connect with who we are as people and getting to create things. It's incredible what people do and what people make with their hands. You know, getting to watch musicians create music, and you watch them and you're like, oh my God, that's amazing. And you have that feeling, and people have those reactions to paintings and to sculpture. And, you know, you have a handmade mug and it becomes your favorite mug because somebody made it. I don't think that people realize they can get in on that. You know, mm-hmm. People come and take a ceramics class with me, and in 4 weeks they walk away with a mug they made, and they're really excited about that. You know, watching people, I took some painting classes this summer. It's been forever since I painted, but, you know, I did these plein air landscape painting classes with Tim Ortiz, and walking away from it, creating these paintings, they don't have any significance to anybody else. Not many people are going to look at my paintings and be like, wow, that's something fantastic. But to know that it is something that I was able to do with my hands, and just have, and just know that you have that ability. It's really cool connecting with what we're capable of as people.
That sounds like a lot of fun. If somebody wants to get in on it, where should they go for more info?
Yeah, you can give us a call at 586-1750 or go online. All of our classes are online, www.canvasarts.org.
Sounds like fun, you two.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thanks for all you do down there.
Yeah, thank you for having us on, Scott.
Yeah. Are we missing anything?
I guess just a quick drop. In November, we have a really exciting exhibit coming up that we're working on with Trout Unlimited and Salmon Beyond Borders. And it's going to be a fly fishing focused exhibit with handmade bamboo fly rods from a fellow here in town, a bunch of great paintings, some decorative show spey flies. So something to look forward to in November.
Great. Thanks, you too.
Thanks.
Thank you.
I have to turn my head and
Stress can affect your health in many ways, whether it's trouble at school, job pressure, economic strain, or a personal trauma. Know that you are not alone. There is free, confidential help available 24 hours per day at 877-294-0074. If you or someone you love is in need of support, call the Search Helpline at 877-294-0074.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Monday, October 12th. It's about 10 minutes until the top of the hour, and now I have been joined in the studio by Sally Smith. A lot of folks may know her as the founder of the Holiday Pops Juno Lyric Opera. But Sally, you were just telling me the Juno Lyric Opera is now part of the Juno Arts and Humanities Council.
No, actually not. They're not. They haven't joined.
Okay.
We have just moved Holiday Pops over to the Juno Arts and Humanities Council. Juno Lyric Opera this year opted to do a Mall in the Night Visitors. So we just made a little shift so that everybody could do what they wanted to do.
All right. So 8 years, it's a fun event. Tell us what it looks and sounds like.
This is an opportunity for anybody who likes to sing in the shower or in the car, or maybe they're even serious singers. We need everybody to come out, join the chorus, and sing familiar seasonal offerings. The first half of our concert is It's secular. That's the word. It's secular. So you can have anything from Winter Wonderland, which we're not doing this year, to Santa Claus, to snow, and then the second half moves more to the sacred, and we're joined by the Capitol Brass this year for, it's been different brass groups. I think this is the third or fourth year for the Capitol Brass. So we invite people to come and sing four-part chorus. We learn the songs, and then we present two concerts for the holiday season as a gift to the community. We're all volunteer. We keep the ticket prices low, so it's accessible to everyone in the community.
Okay. And you need folks to sing.
We sure do.
Yeah, tell us about that.
We don't just need them. We want them because it's fun. This is an opportunity with no auditions and no fees. It's truly, if you like to sing, come join us. If you're a non-reader of music, we have a CD in your voice part, unless you're a soprano, because that's the melody. And anybody who sings, sings melody, so that's fine. So it's accessible from that standpoint. Everyone can learn to sing a part. We do that over 13 rehearsals, and then we present our concerts.
Okay, so you were the founder of the Holiday Pops part of this. What inspired you to start this?
I have a degree in music education with a choral emphasis, and I saw a need to bring people in at an entry level to sing in a group without having to pay a high fee to sing to offset the costs of doing the production. I found that music is important to everyone for their growth and development of their brain, for their happiness. We all sing. Whether or not we've been trained, we hum along to the tunes in the car. Why not put that into a group, meet other people in your community from all backgrounds, all ages, all occupations, get to know one another, share in the spirit of the season, and give the gift to the community. And these are songs that, because of the change in how we approach the holiday season, it's no longer just Christmas anymore. We wanted to broaden that base and be inclusive and bring back some of the music that isn't being sung.
I think you've answered this a little bit, but what are you most proud of in the 8 years that this has been happening?
That we run from 50 to 70 singers. That it's really been popular. And last year, we sold out both our concerts before the event.
Okay. If somebody wants to go, I guess before we even talk about that, we should talk about participating and singing. Where should they get information for that and contacting you and all of that?
They can drop an email to sallysmith@mac.com for more information. But the best thing would be just to come and give this a try on October 25th at 3 o'clock. We'll have our first rehearsal. That's a week from this coming Sunday. And we'll be at the Jack for that rehearsal.
What time is that?
3 o'clock.
All right. Sunday, October 25th at the Jack. Right. And your email once more?
SallySmith@mac.com.
Okay. Well, that sounds like fun.
It is fun. And then we rehearse Tuesday nights in the Valley at the Thunder Mountain High School Choral Room.
Are there any perennial favorites that you sing every year?
We do. We have two. We do 'Twas the Night Before Christmas, and we do Joy to the World accompanied by the Brass. Those are two that our audiences and our chorus can both count on.
Okay. Send Sally Smith an email at sallysmith@mac.com or drop by the Jack on Sunday, October 25th at 3 p.m. to be part of the Holiday Pops concert. Sally, are we missing anything?
I don't think we're missing anything except for the absolute joy that you get from a couple of hours of rehearsal, meeting new people, and kind of putting everything at the door. I call it a mini vacation twice a week.
Thanks a lot, Sally. I know, it's only October. Tomorrow, on a Juno afternoon, at 3, Rich Moniak will be here to highlight this month's mudrooms. We'll start a new monthly segment with AEYC, The Business of Caring. We'll get a preview of the new Juno Douglas High School production of Meet Me in St. Louis, and career counselor Terry Calvin and career technical career education. Karen Spolin will be here to discuss this year's college fair. That Writer's Almanac, Bird Note, music and more live at 3 on KTOO News, repeated at 4 on KRNN, and online via KTOO.org. Currently it's 49 degrees out at the Juneau Airport. Let's take a look at the weather. Tonight, showers, lows around 44. Tuesday, more showers, highs around 49. And Wednesday, rain showers likely, highs around 50. And Thursday, mostly cloudy, highs around 48. Thanks for tuning in to a Juno afternoon. Tune in same time, same place tomorrow.